You ever watch the guy on the free throw line, or the 20-yard line, or the third baseline, and feel like you know exactly what's about to happen? Get your phone out. Bet live instantly on every game, every play, with the Tipico Sportsbook app. And with built-in bet assist, you can move fast and never miss a shot. Tipico, let's make this interesting. Download the app at tipico.com. Terms apply. Must be 21 or older. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700.
Thanks for listening to the Fan Late Night on demand. I'm Sean Drotar, and before I start using a bunch of unnecessarily long-winded words to describe what's latest and greatest in Denver sports, make sure you follow the rest of the station's podcasts. Subscribe wherever you download your podcasts, and always at 1043thefan.com.
Denver Sports Station 1043 The Fan presents Sandy and Sean.
Welcome to Sandy and Sean. I'm Sean Drotar, Sandy Clough on my right. The Denver Broncos, of course, named in the class action lawsuit brought by former Miami Dolphins head coach Brian Flores, one of the teams specifically named in a class action lawsuit that involved the entire league. But one of the more concerning statements was the idea that Brian Flores alleged that when he was interviewing for the job that eventually went to Vic Fangio, that one, the Broncos did not take him seriously as a candidate, and he felt that was the case because he didn't feel that, quite frankly, the Broncos brass, specifically John Elway and Joe Ellis, according to his alleged statement there in the class action lawsuit, may have been hungover, for lack of a better term. That's what they said. Now, as you would expect, the Broncos immediately put out a statement saying that they disagreed with all of that. And again, then today, John Elway himself, one of the people specifically named as not taking it seriously and perhaps showing up hungover, released this statement, quote, "It's unfortunate and shocking to learn for the first time this week that Brian felt differently about our interview with him. For Brian to make an assumption about my appearance and state of mind early that morning was subjective, hurtful, and just plain wrong. If I appeared disheveled, as he claimed, it was because we had flown in during the middle of the night, immediately following another interview in Denver, and were going on a few hours of sleep to meet the only window provided to us. I interviewed Brian in good faith, giving him the same consideration and opportunity as every other candidate for a head coaching position in 2019. Now, that does square with the Broncos statement that they landed very early in the morning, like at 2:30 in the morning, and then had this 7:30 a.m. meeting. So the Broncos at least have their story straight.
If it's just plain wrong, why does he concede that he may have been disheveled? That's what confuses me about
disheveled
this,
is different than
these total denials are issued. But in the lawsuit, it says disheveled. Now, the conclusion he reached is obviously subjective. But I was surprised, that John's being honest about this, at least in this sense, that he says, if I appeared disheveled as he claimed, and then he sort of confirms.
Explained why he would look that way. Which I get. I don't find that. I understand this is going to unpack, but
I know.
I don't find that to be
Then he goes on, and I'm not disputing it. I'm just saying it's not the most convincing denial I've ever heard. when you say it's totally wrong, and then you back up the central assertion regarding the appearance. Now, the conclusions he drew from that are of course, subjective. And that's why we said a couple of nights before, I think when we first started talking about this, that the heart of his case is pointed at the Miami Dolphins.
Yes.
That's the heart of the case.
And to an extent, the Giants.
And to an extent, the Giants, because he has documentation. The Broncos are placed in there as an example of the systemic nature of racism that exists in the NFL in his estimation.
Yes. At the very least, some kind of inequity being involved.
So it's...
For whatever is driving it.
It's seemingly, just to me, looking at it on the surface, it is the lesser of the three charges he makes. It's a little fuzzier than the other two. On one, he has Bill Belichick, and the Giants can say what they want, that, well, Belichick was just expressing an opinion. Well, if it was just an opinion, it was pretty damn well-informed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Pretty damn well-informed.
Obviously, it turned out to be right, and he said specifically.
I read that text. Sure didn't seem like an opinion to me.
Seemed like he thought he was talking to Brian Daboll.
Inside information. Inside information that turned out to be right. So, yes, these denials, along with the NFL's dismissal of this case having no merit, as if they, in 3 hours, investigated Stephen Ross and found him to be not guilty of ever offering money to Brian Flores so that he would lose as many games as he could possibly lose during his first year as head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Of course, they've done no investigation. I don't imagine they'll do a serious investigation on this.
I think
it takes litigation.
Yeah, the Broncos
to move people off the dime, big companies, and you know, I'm just looking at the St. Louis situation, and
right.
There's a $790 million settlement in there.
And can you just real quickly go over what that is? Because you're right. It went so quietly that a lot of people might not even be aware of exactly what you're talking about. But this is, as you've pointed out, kind of the way the NFL kind of prefers to do business, keep it quiet.
Well, there was a lawsuit filed by the city of St. Louis when Stan Kroenke moved the St. Louis Rams to Los Angeles. And the eventual settlement figure, rather than going to trial, which the NFL does not want to do because trials involve discovery. And if there is a word the NFL never wants to hear, it's discovery. Because that involves the production of evidence and documents that don't always reflect well on the defendant, and the NFL doesn't want that stuff out. That's why I imagine they're a little bit concerned, and if they aren't a little bit concerned, they should be, and maybe more than a little concerned, with the congressional hearing that came out today that involved further accusations, not against Daniel Snyder's football team, but against Daniel Snyder himself. They should be very worried about this. When congressional hearings take place, when there are lawsuits put forth by cities that wind up in several hundreds of millions of dollars worth of settlement money, that tells you that sometimes this stuff works and it gets them moving in a certain direction with its, you know, the class action suit that was filed on concussions years ago. Maybe the settlement figure wasn't adequate, but there was a settlement figure.
Colin Kaepernick, of course, was also settled in the collusion case. And it's important to be clear. Because someone settles is not necessarily admission of guilt. But I think it's fair to say that
it
means you don't want to go to trial for whatever reason. You either don't want something discovered during the process or you're not entirely convinced you would win. And those would be primarily the reasons for settling out of court. In the NFL's case, might be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B for the majority of the time. And you're right. Fortunately, the league has more than enough money just lying around to handle it. You need to throw $700 million city's way to make it quiet? Okay, we have that. Not a problem. That can be handled. Need to give Colin Kaepernick a settlement and reportedly the millions. That's okay. Not a problem. We won't even notice that. Pocket change for us. And so that makes this such a fascinating suit for the league. And it's such a highly visible time for the league. It was timed, I would say, essentially for Flores and his representation perfectly. This is the one time the league would love for you to just talk about football, the Super Bowls.
Of course.
Just a week and change away. And nobody's talking about the Super Bowl.
No.
Nobody.
And I doubt there will be the same kind of Super Bowl talk next week that you'd normally
not
be
just
getting
go away.
With two teams like this playing in the game. The Cincinnati Bengals, at least the Rams were in the game a few years ago, so they're not necessarily new. They had a different quarterback, but then Aaron Donald's still there, and some of their key players are still around from that period. But Cincinnati's brand new. Cincinnati hasn't been in a Super Bowl since
89,
and that would be after the 88 season.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that, 33 years?
Yep.
Normally, and they'll be talking about this next week.
Yeah, but the number one pick in the draft, by the way, this is unavoidable. Joining us now to talk about some of the thought processes around the situation is Dr. Rick Perea. Sometimes you have an opportunity to hear him on this program. You can find more about him at think14u.org, and that 4 is the number 4. Dr. Rick, thank you for joining us, as always. When you heard about this news from the NFL, I think anybody who's followed the league, and we know you do, understands that the Rooney Rule has had unintended consequences. And now it seems as if what Brian Flores is bringing to the fore, and with mentions of it from Marvin Lewis and Hugh Jackson, publicly, at least not only in support, but with somewhat stories that corroborate that concept in the NFL. What was your first thought?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on, Sean, Sandy. Great to be with you guys. Yeah, you know, when I first heard the stories, it just really corroborated what I've experienced. Quite honestly, I've been around the league for a number of years, originally as a player, but now most recently as a psychologist. And I got to tell you guys, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that a lot of people don't know about. And, you know, one of the things is some of the things that Brian talked about. And, you know, ironically, I was thinking the other day that all these teams that have been brought up, Miami, New York, Denver,
yeah,
and now Cleveland, by association with Hugh.
Right.
I've been associated with every
right.
single one of those.
You teams. Know all these people. You know the principals involved here.
Yeah. And I started thinking about it, and then starting a few days ago, these principals started contacting me, and even their attorneys did. So I'm a little bit limited in what
sure.
I can talk about right now. But what I can say is, you know, these stories do have some validity to them. And I can give personal experience as to how that affected me in Miami when I was down there. So I think it's really important that we take a pause, and I saw the letter that Tony Dungy wrote.
Yeah.
And I thought it was very thoughtful and mindful. But here's the thing I would say, Sandy and Sean, that I think is really important, and this I have expressed to the attorneys and the principals that be, Brian and Hugh, and that is people need to understand the right words to use when they're making accusations.
Right.
I believe in my heart of hearts that this is not truly what we call racism, okay? It's what we call ethnocentrism. That word we use in psychology, it describes that we believe that the way we were raised, our cultural belief systems, the way, you know, our habits, our daily norms, those are the right way to live, and those are the best way to live. And they're not necessarily associated with race. Let me give you an example. Stephen Ross didn't hire Brian because he was white. He was black. He hired him, and he was going to be his guy. Now, was he a bridge coach? Perhaps. A bridge coach is one that he knows is not going to win. He's just going to be there for a few years, and
right.
then he's going to find the guy he wants. But I don't believe Stephen Ross is racist. I don't. I don't believe.
And you know Stephen Ross. You
I
know
Stephen Ross.
Right.
I know him personally. I know Chris Greer, the GM there,
right.
who's also black. but he was kind of the go-to person to transform these messages. But I do believe a lot of coaches in the NFL are ethnocentric. And what that means is they tend to see things through their lens and viewpoint. And that doesn't necessarily express the black experience. Let me give you an example. When I first got hired down in Miami, I was in the building about 2 days getting my office set up. And Sandy, you'd been in my office. Yes. And you saw the whole setup down there. But I was approached by a few white coaches. And they said, oh, where'd you come from? I said, well, I was with the Broncos last year. We won the Super Bowl XYZ. And they said, well, you're gonna really like it here in this building. It's really cool. But then they said, you know, you're not going to like it out there. And I said, what do you mean? They said, well, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, it's like a third world country here. And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you know, you can walk into a drugstore or a grocery store, and a lot of the people working there, English is their second language. They don't really even know how to speak English, and it's really frustrating. And I looked at them in a way like, huh, isn't that interesting? And they said, so you'll really like it here in the building, but you're not going to like it out there very much. And then I took away from that, Sandy, as you know, I'm part Latin, you know, I'm Hispanic, but I'm also Italian. And so the Hispanic part of me took a pause with that because I thought to myself, wait a minute, you don't know my experience. I like Latino people. I like Cubans. I like Puerto Ricans. I like all that flavor down here in South Miami.
That's a big reason why you moved down there.
Exactly. But I don't think those coaches were racist.
Right.
They were ethnocentric. And I think we've really got to make that distinction. And, you know, I've made that comment to a couple of those guys, and I think we're going to start using that term. I don't know how involved I'm going to be in this case, but I do know that I can help the principals that be by using the proper words, because even these attorneys are not versed in the psychological constructs that we should be describing human behavior in. It's not racist. I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. It's ethnocentric. It's classist. But it's not racist.
There is another situation, I think, that ties into that. And when you look at the number of coaches in the NFL that are related to other coaches, and it happens all over the league. Research by Kalen Kaler over at The Defector, an NFL writer there, said that 25% of the offensive or defensive coordinators in this league, at least at the beginning of the year, now coaches have been hired, have been related in some way to a current or past NFL coach. And each team has 3.4 coaches on average that are related to a current or past coach. That is another tie in there, because there is this comfort level and an advantage for people because they have started with their fathers from day one. One of the cases with Mike Zimmer and Adam Zimmer, now departed from Minnesota, to give you a bit of background. Adam Zimmer was a questionable hire at times in his role, but you go back and look, and Adam Zimmer as a child is on the sidelines when his dad was with the Dallas Cowboys. So the experience that he has may be legitimate, but it's an experience he has only because of his relation to the person that he was born to. And that's part of this issue as well, isn't it?
It is. It is. You know, there's a systemic cronyism that's really involved in this. Let me give you an example. So I believe that, you know, just like when we put together a football team, we want to put together the best athletes, the best players at all positions, quarterback, linebacker, defensive line. You also want to have the best coaches. And the best coaching staffs that I've ever been around, and again, just for the listeners, I've been around a lot of coaches in the NFL, college, and even high school, but specifically the NFL is what we're talking about. And I can tell you the best staffs are divergent thinkers. And what I mean by that is they come from different cultures. They come from different backgrounds. They have a different way of thinking. I've sat in coaches' meetings in the NFL, and I call it the sore neck syndrome. People sit around and they just said, Hey, I like this kid in the draft. And the next coach says, yeah, I do too. But I've sat in meeting rooms where a coach will say, hey, I like this outside linebacker. He's got fluid hips. He's real explosive at the point of attack. But then I've heard another coach say, yeah, I understand that. But then we sacrifice something in terms of our pass coverage with him. And they bring up divergent thinking. And as you guys know, in any organization, whether it's an athletic endeavor or whether it's a business endeavor, the organization will be stronger with divergent thinking. And so to your point, Sean, there is a lot of homogeneity within the NFL. The thinking is alike. The backgrounds are alike. The ethnicities and cultural practices and norms are very similar. And what Tony got to in his letter was, if we bring in differences, if we bring in different cultures, different races, different ethnicities, different education levels, you know, you guys have heard me say that I think in the next 20 years, we're going to hire head coaches based on their leadership skills more than their football acumen.
Sure.
That's what the top organizations do in the world. They don't care if they sell widgets, cars, or fences. Are they good leaders? Do they lead people? So I believe that we have too much homogeneity in the league. And, you know, it's kind of sad that it took 2021, a guy named Brian Flores, who has stood up to the institution, and now you see other people like Hugh. And by the way, let me say this about Hugh Jackson. You can say anything you want to about how many games he won in Cleveland.
And people have, as you well know.
Yeah, he is one of the most upstanding human beings I have ever been around, for all races, for all classes. I've seen that man help families in situations that he didn't want anybody to know. He helped families in a financial way with players, coaches, and he didn't want any publicity from it. He is a good human being. So I'll tell you what, we're going to have to find out really how far all this goes. But I'll tell you what, I'll stand behind Brian and Hugh Jackson all day long.
The situation with the Denver Broncos, I want to take it back to that because you just talked about divergent thinking and how it's better sometimes to have that group out there with people being able to bring different kind of experiences to the fore. As it stands for right now, and the Broncos are still assembling their coaching staff, they did hire the son of a former coach in Nathaniel Hackett, but the Broncos' offensive side of the ball has 9 assistant coaches, to which when Sandy heard that yesterday, his eyes kind of popped out of his head. You know, 9, that seems like a lot, and it seems like a lot to me too, but as soon as you talked about that, and we mentioned it last night, maybe, because a lot of the younger coaches are doing it this way, maybe this is a way to lean into that divergent thinking and to have a larger group of people as long as they're empowered to speak up, right?
Yeah, as long as they're empowered to speak up, but as long as they bring differences to the table, you know, different, we call it pedagogy, how somebody teaches and coaches.
Right.
If their pedagogical delivery system is very homogeneic to the people that they were hired by, then they won't bring the divergent thinking. You've got to always look for that in your staff to bring the differences in. And so I really hope that the Broncos, through these hires, are looking for that aspect, because if you don't have divergent thinking, you're going to have homogeneity, and you're really not going to have the best staff you can. And that happens time and time again. You know, I have seen, and people, you know, I tell people this sometimes there are high school coaches that are better teachers of the game than even in the NFL. I've seen it time and time again, because like you said, Sean, there's staff that sometimes have so much inbreeding, so much homogeneity. They hire people they know, they hire people that came from the same systems, and then that doesn't advance the thinking of the team to go forward. The biggest thing that I think Tony said in his letter that resonated with me is, we've got to really put together the best staffs, just like we want to put together the best teams. We have to have the need and the drive, and it starts with ownership.
Yeah, that's a great point. And this is the last one for me, Rick, and thanks again for coming on. Does the Rooney Rule work even as amended back in October? Does the Rooney Rule work anymore? The data suggests that it doesn't. What do you think?
I don't think it works, Sandy. I think it's too oversimplistic. I think it's time that the NFL, and I'm going to sound biased when I say this, I think it's time that the NFL employs organizational psychologists to get involved here, because organizational psychologists understand how organizations perform at peak levels. And you've got to be able to understand that it's not race that makes a team divergent. It's not ethnicity necessarily that makes the team divergent. It's their practices and norms. And the practices and norms comes from their culture, not necessarily from their skin color. And so one of the things I learned in living in South Florida, there's so many black athletes down there that are Afro-Caribbean. not Afro-American, but they're Afro-Caribbean. And so the more we can educate ourselves, Sandy and Sean, about it's not necessarily skin color, it's the practices and norms of a cultural background, and that we understand that at a deep level, from the ownership all the way down to understand how we can understand different belief systems, then we're going to start to really value that and say, you know what, I want those different cultural backgrounds on my staff to help us advance. Because I can tell you this, I have had athletes come in my office, whether it was in Denver, Miami, Cleveland, wherever I was, come in my office and say, you know what, my white coach doesn't have a clue of who I am. But yet when you see them on the field together, they look like brothers. They're hugging each other. They're loving each other up. We've got to get better at bridging that gap of being authentic and real to understand the cultural influences of how coaches teach athletes and how athletes learn from coaches from different backgrounds.
Well, just to add to what you said, I remember one of the things that you told me when you were working for the Broncos back in 2015 was how stunning it was to see Wade Phillips and Aqib Talib develop more than just a close professional relationship in which there was mutual respect between the two, but a deep personal friendship that carried over when Wade became the defensive coordinator with the Rams and they brought Aqib in. And I remember covering the Super Bowl several years ago when the Rams were involved, and how they interacted was remarkable to me. And on the surface, you would have thought that these two people had absolutely nothing in common, culturally or otherwise.
Right. But the thing that Wade had and does still have is he's got a beautiful heart. He has an open heart. He loves his players. They know he loves them. And it doesn't matter whether it's cultural, skin color, ethnocentrism, whatever it is. Wade has an open heart, and that's pretty rare in the NFL. I got to be honest with you. That's pretty rare, and that's why you saw that 2015 defense play to a whole nother level, because they knew their coach had their back 100%.
He is Dr. Rick Perea. Make sure you check out the website at think14u.org. That's for the number four, and check out everything that he's putting together on the website. There's books. There's a lot of information. I'm doing motivational speaking and psychology. A lot of what you got to hear right now. Always good to talk to you, Doctor. Appreciate the time.
Thanks, Rick.
Sandy, Sean, thank you for having me on. I love you guys. I just want to tell the listeners one thing. Love each other out there in the world. It's kind of crazy right now, but trust each other, loving each other, and believing each other, and we'll get where we need to be. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Doctor. Dr. Rick Perea joining us, obviously, some very interesting concepts there. And I think we'll break that down later this evening.
The
idea that the difference between ethnocentrism, which I think is a very, very good point that he made, it obviously requires a little bit of unpacking. And I think starting that discussion was very good.
And it's sort of the subject that we haven't exactly dealt with, but I've read so many pieces that have mentioned this notion of conscious bias versus unconscious bias, and I think that ties in to what Rick is talking about.
Next, we will head to Mobile, Alabama. You might not have heard Cecil Lammy this last couple of evenings. John Davis been doing a great job filling in for him. That's because Cecil is out covering the Senior Bowl, and we're going to get the latest from him next.
It's Sandy and Sean on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
This is Cecil Lammy's time of year right now. You think it's when the games are going on. It is not. It is not. It is this stuff right now because Senior Bowl is coming up this week. Cecil Lammy is down in Mobile, Alabama, taking a look at everybody out there. And, of course, the quarterbacks lead the way because the Broncos still haven't solved that yet. From our own Nick and Cecil show right here on The Fan and Cecil Lammy on Twitter. It's Cecil Lammy. Thanks for joining us. And you know what? Let's hop right into it. How do these QBs look, Cecil?
Yeah, actually just finishing up my day three report here for DenverFan.com. You'll be able to read it tomorrow. And actually at the quarterback ticker section, is what I call it, because I think we're seeing a delineation. We're seeing a direct difference between the top three passers and then the other two guys out of the top five that we should see here and in the NFL draft. Malik Willis is the talk of the town from Liberty, maybe moving into the number two overall pick. Now, that may seem a little wild for people, especially because we all thought, Hutchinson will go there for Michigan, right?
Right.
It's like perfect for everybody, but Detroit is coaching him, and I remember this was before I went to the Senior Bowl, but I still recorded it. It was when they first started showing the Senior Bowl on NFL Network, and some guy named Philip Rivers at NC State was coached by then San Diego Chargers head coach, God rest his soul, Marty Schottenheimer.
Right.
And Schottenheimer fell in love with that. And we've seen it time and time again, right? The Broncos and how they saw Drew Lock here, and they picked him up. Now the Broncos weren't coaching that year. They're coaching 2018, and then they didn't draft a guy. Josh Allen would have been nice. But anyway, so we've seen it before in the past where if you coach a guy during the week, you get to know him, well, then you fall in love. And, hey, I mean, Jared Goff or Malik Willis, I know where I come down on that. I think that Kenny Pickett has been the most consistent of these performers.
Right.
Not necessarily boring, but just, you know, he's not going to throw those wild plays or take a ton of chances.
Right.
Be safe, be sound, very intelligent player. And then Carson Strong, a little bit more mobile than I gave him credit for on film, which is good for him. It's what he needed to show. But we're definitely seeing Desmond Ridder from Cincinnati as a project, like a maybe even a third-round project. And then we're seeing Sam Howell. I don't really know why anyone would get excited to drop Sam Howell, but that's just me. But that's how we're seeing, after 3 days, you can kind of tell the who's who of the quarterback position.
Help me out here. What's happened to Howell? I know he didn't have Carter and Javonte Williams with him this year, but wasn't it true a couple of years back that he was considered – perhaps a future number one overall pick?
Yeah, you were looking at him like you'd look at Baker Mayfield, right?
What the heck happened?
And what the heck happened is just no juice on his throws. Now, he's the best deep ball passer in this draft class. He throws a pretty deep pass. And as you mentioned, when he had Carter and Williams run to the rock, he could use play action. He could throw it up there and let his receivers go get it. When he has to go, like, off script, when he has to go through his progressions quicker, there seems to be a slowness to his processor, which you don't see with play action, because play action is
pretty simple. And that's bad. That's bad. Yeah. Processing information is very important.
In this league, you'll get crushed that way. And then you talk about shorter quarterback. We could get into that conversation again. And not everybody's Drew Brees or Russell Wilson. Okay, I know that we have recent examples that are excellent for these 6-foot-tall quarterbacks, but we also have recent examples that aren't so very good, the aforementioned Baker Mayfield. So, you know, I don't think Howell has done himself any favors this week. Maybe hasn't shown that he's as much of a project as Ridder, but certainly not in the first-round conversation, in my opinion, or the people I talk to.
Now, one of the quarterbacks that people haven't really talked about, but he's at the Senior Bowl, is Western Kentucky's Bailey Zappe, who ended up breaking Joe Burrow's touchdown record. And obviously the competition is very different than the SEC. But we talk about the things you look for in modern quarterbacks, and people talk about processing, right? Make sure you can process the game quickly. Besides his accuracy, which seems to be very good, processing is a lot of what people talk about with Zappe, and he's expected to be kind of a mid-round guy. What is the difference, you think, between him? What's the gap between him and a Ridder or a Howell?
I think it's large. I think it's significant. Zappe barely made my notebook. And not that I see everything. There's a lot to watch, but I do go back over the practice film when I'm done. I'll go to practice or, you know, go stand in the rain and watch nothing yesterday, basically. But I'll come back to the hotel and then I'll watch the coach's film. And you just don't see the arm strength when you're talking about pushing the ball down the field, when you're talking about making cross-field throws. You don't see that with him. And I'm not going to compare everyone to Willis, but even with Strong and even with Ridder, Ridder has all the tools. Ridder has everything. He just hasn't made NFL decisions. And you can tell. You can tell he does not like NFL windows because he's expecting guys to be wide open. You don't see that necessarily with Zappe, but you also don't see the ability to push the ball into those tight windows if it's not, you know, in front of him or on the same side of the field. Not really that guy to make those other throws. So, you know, mid, late round guy. It's not a great quarterback class. None of these guys would be ahead of Justin Fields. And I'll throw Matt Corral, who's not here, but I'll throw him in the conversation. None of them would be above Justin Fields. So I don't, you know, people get excited and yeah, Malik Willis could be a top 10 pick, but in a normal year, you're not really going to do that. Quarterback desperate league, you're going to do that. Zappi will get picked up, but more of as a developmental guy.
If he's drafted number two overall, as you suggest, as a possibility anyway, he's going to have to play right away.
Yeah.
And the descriptions I've heard, and this may not be a bad thing, but if Josh Allen was a little bit raw coming out of Wyoming, you haven't seen anything yet. Now, that may be a good thing because Josh Allen had the rough edges shaved off rather clearly, and he was coached brilliantly, obviously, in Buffalo, where they didn't try to overload him at first or change his game overnight. Right. And yet that was maybe an example of maybe the exception that proves the rule, that with a lot of other teams, maybe even this one here, they might have messed him up.
Right.
But in Buffalo, right, they got it right. If he is coached properly, is this your position kind of on him? If he's coached the right way, he could be special, and he might even be special fairly quickly. But if he gets with a coach who's married to a system, he might struggle.
Oh, disaster.
Yeah.
It'd be absolute disaster because it's not only coaching him the right way, Sandy, as you well know. It's someone who's open to like, well, I want to do it this way, but he does this.
Right.
Well, so let's just do
right.
that. And it's that type of openness. The egos on the field are one thing. The egos in the coaching staff and the front office are much, much larger because guys are, you know, your Todd Haley's are married to Pat Shurmur, right? They're married to their system. Like, this is the way I've always done it. Well, that's not the way that guy can do it. And I've talked to multiple Giants people almost begging them, like, you guys have to take Malik Willis. You've got Brian Daboll. You've got Mike Kafka, who coached up Pat Mahomes. Of course, Mahomes is great, but still, like, they're going with Daniel Jones. They're going with Daniel Jones. That's what they're saying. That's what I can tell you, and I think that's a huge mistake. A team like the Lions may feel, you know what, maybe we trade back from two, right? Because two is for sale.
Yeah.
And then they pick up a collection of picks, which includes another first rounder, and then they would take Malik Willis a little bit later.
That would, you know, certainly seem to make sense.
Yes, yes. So at two, it's going to have to be, you know, one of the big Thibodeau or Hutchinson. Somebody's going to want those guys, of course, and because there's not a quarterback to move up for. There's not that guy. There's pass rushers and there's offensive linemen in this draft. So, you know, that's a consideration for Detroit to be sure, but they have to be open to what Willis can do and what he can't do and just kind of let him ride.
That is Cecil Amy. Of course, you catch him here every night when he's not, you know, doing the scouting tour right there on Nick and Cecil. Follow his latest at Cecil Amy on Twitter. And, of course, everything's putting together right there at denverfan.com. Thanks so much. I know this is a busy week. It's great to check in with you and get the latest. And, obviously, the idea that Willis is going to be a high riser.
Great stuff.
And
stuff.
I think you're right, Cecil, because we've seen multiple times coaching staffs to coach a guy can fall in love with a guy. It's pretty easy. Appreciate all the insight.
Be good, fellas.
Cecil Lamy, presented by Golden Oak Lending.
We've talked about this, Sandy. Oh. This is, I've been saying it, I don't call it a quarterback needy league. I call it a quarterback desperate league. People make desperate actions.
I can't remember, did we talk about this on the air or off the air? You had a very strong position. I was saying, I can't see any of these quarterbacks going in the top 10, and you said, oh, no,
Multiple not in this
league. There'll be maybe two that go in the top 10, and those two might well be Pickett, who is the quote-unquote safer choice,
okay,
and then Willis, who is a lot like Josh Allen in that there will be ups and downs, but maybe you get with a team like Detroit and Goff plays in 2022, and they use that year to groom Willis. And then Goff is out after this next year. Nobody expects the Lions to do much anyway in 2022. But they coach him up, and he's ready to go in 2023?
Don't forget about Matt Corral, too. He's not a senior bowl because he's not a senior. Beyond riser, too. It is going to be fascinating to
apparently
see what happens
still
with
a
these.
Requirement of the senior bowl.
Yes, it is. Yes, there's at least that. So if that's the case, and these quarterbacks are already flying up the board, and they haven't gotten to the combine yet, where, by the way, Malik Willis is going to dazzle everybody, how aggressive does George Payton have to be if he doesn't land Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson or who knows, maybe even Jimmy Garoppolo or Kirk Cousins? We'll talk about it next.
You're listening to Sandy and Sean on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
It is a quarterback desperate league. Sandy, desperate is the right term. Now, we know, given the draft order, presumably the Jacksonville Jaguars are not going to go for a quarterback. They hired Doug Peterson, by the way, today as their head coach.
That's the big coaching news of the day.
And given the history of the Jacksonville Jaguars, as long as Doug Peterson can get to 3 wins in his Jaguars career, he'll break into their top 5 in wins all time. Urban Meyer holds the number 5 spot as it stands with 2. So there you go. That's the franchise you got there in Jacksonville. But they're probably not going for a quarterback. The Lions do need a long-term answer, even though I think Jared Goff was fine for them this year, but I don't know if it was anything special. Certainly you're looking to upgrade.
I think maybe you're being generous with fine. But as a bridge quarterback for, let's say, next year, and I think that was the original idea
anyway,
they traded for him 1 year, 2 years maybe, and then whether you drafted a quarterback in the first year or the second year, you'd find a quarterback and groom that quarterback for a year with the idea being that come 2023, 2024 at the latest, that quarterback would be ready to play.
So, not a shock they may be going for a quarterback. At number 3, you have the Texans. They need a quarterback.
Right.
The Jets do not at 4. At 5, tough to say. I'm actually inclined to believe they are going to go with Daniel Jones for one more year. I think that's probably the case given the contract situation.
It's a mistake.
It's a mistake, but I think they'll do it.
They seem, come hell or high water, determined to give him a chance, and everybody's saying the new GM and I suppose Brian Daboll saying they believe in him. Now, I have no idea what that believes. You believe in somebody until you don't believe in them.
Right. But if you're Daboll,
the Broncos believed in Drew Locke once upon a time until they didn't.
You can see some similarities. I am make very clear. I'm not comparing Daniel Jones to Josh Allen. But there are some similarities that I imagine if you're Brian Daboll, you're thinking for a year, let me work with him. Let me see what I can do here. I think that's possible.
He's definitely got no more than a year. And
right.
The only thing giving him, well, there are 2 things. One, that they wiped out the coaching staff, which wasn't a given at the end of the year.
No.
In fact, most national analysts, correspondents felt that he'd be back. The Judge would be back and definitely stick with Jones in 2022. I think he gets another chance because it's another set of eyes looking at him, at least one set of eyes and perhaps more than that. And I also think the team was so bad and their offensive line almost historically bad that they feel any quarterback prospect who's running for his life all the time can't be adequately judged.
And maybe in a year where the quarterback class is considered to be less than average, maybe that's not the year to reach. So it wouldn't surprise me if the Giants stood pat. Now, after that, you got the Panthers. They need a long-term answer. They could be going for a quarterback. They need one badly. Now, the idea that they might attempt to trade for Russell Wilson makes sense. The question is, would Russell Wilson want to go there? Because they don't exactly look Super Bowl ready. So they probably need a quarterback. Then you go back to the Giants. We talked about that. And then the Falcons. Now, the Falcons, there was a thought that maybe they would pick a quarterback, but they went with Matt Ryan one more year. Ryan was fine. Ryan would...
Yeah, actually, he was fine.
He was fine. And there was nothing really wrong with it. He wasn't the reason that the team, you know, had issues. No.
And actually, they were mathematically alive.
They
up until
finished
what,
the season
the
much better than they started it. Yeah, especially as Kyle Pitts started going along. And that actually started to look like a pretty good pick, to be completely honest. Pitts looks phenomenal.
Oh, yeah. He looks like he could be...
Kelsey's in the Kelsey-Gronkowski world. Then that's Kittle. That's elite. And then you get... to the Broncos. So now, would Atlanta this year jump on one of those quarterbacks? My thought process is probably no, because if quarterbacks are going early, this is actually considered to be a pretty good draft for tackles.
Yes.
Which of the
an exceptionally good draft for tackles.
Falcons would probably go that route. And here's the tricky part. I think when we're running over it there, you talk about the Lions at 2, the Texans at 3, the Panthers at 6. Sandy, I know this is supposed to be a bad year for quarterbacks. I think you might see 3 go in the top 6, and I'm not kidding, because it is that desperate a league. Teams will talk themselves into something. They will. Malik Willis, as much as he dazzles athletically, is a project. He's going to require the Josh Allen type coaching, and you better get it just right.
I remember watching him pretty
lot of
close
picks.
To an entire game. And his team was overmatched, and I tried to take that into account, but boy, was he erratic.
Accuracy is not quite there.
For his arm, but even at the Senior Bowl this week, the reports have been that, you know, at times he's looked pretty rough around the edges.
Yeah, physically impressive.
But physically, he is by far the most impressive of the quarterbacks on hand.
But you could have 3. Now, if you're the Broncos and you miss on one of the big names that you're going after, the top 3 quarterbacks might be gone by the time you're at 9. How aggressive do you have to be? How aggressive would you want the Broncos to be? The RamosLaw.com text line is 303-713-1043. Let us know. Would you be willing to trade up? Try to get Kenny Pickett or Matt Corral. We'll talk about it next.
Miss any of the Fan Late Night with Sean Drotar? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.